Good evening and welcome to all of you. It is wonderful to see so many people. I know there is a bit tight in here, but I hope that it will be okay. Dear Michael, welcome to you.
Thank you.
We have looked forward to your visit a very long time, and we are happy to have you here.
Thank you.
I think most of you know who Michael is and what he stands for, but I can give a little brief. Michael is the founder of the Seven Ray Institute. He is also the head of the Internet School Moria Federation. And further, Michael is also the author of the big book, Tapestry of the Gods. And a few more things. There will be a small break about 8:15, and it will be able to enjoy a cup of coffee, tea, and a little cake or fruit. And if you want, you can also visit our book shop on the first floor. And now, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, thank you, everybody. I will have to speak in my best English. I hope that's okay. I had the whole week to learn Danish, but I failed. But it's a little easier than Finnish, where I live, in Finland. I'm very happy to be back in the Theosophical Circle. I've been coming to Denmark since 1991, and I had the chance at that time with Greta Fremming and Rolf Hausbol and a number of the Theosophical people to teach about the Seven Rays and the Alice Bailey work, which I have been involved in, and Theosophy. I guess I've been a member of the Theosophical Society since 1966, and then the Alice Bailey work following that, and I look at it as all one thing. So I consider that I am teaching the ageless wisdom, the great light that predates anything that's happened in our planet or in our solar system. It's ageless, it's eternal, and it reappears in every universe, successively, endlessly, infinitely. And at the point of development in every universe, there comes a time, and on every planet, when the light has to break forth and we have to find our way out of entrapment by the lower dimensions, and such a time is now. We live, you know, our humanity on this little earth, a non-sacred planet in the esoteric astrology. We live at a critical time of planetary initiation. Our planetary God, who functions, we are told, as the base of the spine center in the great solar deity, is going through an initiatory process, and that particular initiation is called the crucifixion or the great renunciation. We know it from Christianity and what it meant for the Master Jesus, and how much there is to give up at that time so that you can enter into a higher dimension. And that's precisely what is happening on our planet now. Our planetary logos has the opportunity to transfer his attention from his materialistic personality on the third ray of activity. And some of you know the ray language a little bit. How many of you have been into it? So I'll say a little bit about it as we go along. But he has the chance to transfer into his soul, because every great being has a spirit, soul, and body just the way we do. And so this time of great transition, the soul life of our planetary logos is emerging, and we are all little cells in our planetary God. And he's going through this great rending process, and we as cells are doing the same. But when it's all over, we will be emerging into that phase of planetary expression which could be called a phase of illumination, a phase of radiation. And our whole planet is on its way to becoming a sacred planet, which it is not yet, just the way there are non-sacred human beings and sacred human beings. Well, internally, as spirits, we're all sacred, okay? I mean, we're all the one thing. We're all the one pure, absolute being without distinction. But when it comes to how we manifest, we go through sacred and non-sacred stages. Well, anyway, we're emerging into sacredness now on our planet. It may take a few million years because, you know, their time scale is a little different from ours. But we have great opportunity and also great crisis at this time. There's always a choice. Do we go backwards to what we think is safer? And it's not safer at all. In matter of fact, it's just a sort of a repression of the sublime, to use the psychological language. Or do we go forward, dropping our fear, into the new possibilities of the Aquarian Age, which will last some 2,160 years, and that's just the little Aquarian Age. We're going into a double age of Aquarius now, we're told in the science of cycles. And one of them, the early one, begins in the year 2117. The next time Venus crosses the Sun in a transit, the age of Aquarius will technically begin. And it's about a 2,000 year age or 2,500 year age, depending on how you measure it. But actually, the Earth is rotating or gyrating in such a manner that a 25,000-year age of Aquarius is also about to begin, the larger cycle. One complete gyration through all the 12 zodiacal ages, or equinoctial ages, is about to occur. And so for the next 25,000 years, we have unprecedented opportunity to move towards the sacredness of our planet, and many of us will have initiatory opportunities as well, which means we can enter into a greater phase of consciousness and power and unity with each other. Humanity now has the opportunity to become a one spiritual family. It's going to be resisted strenuously, but there are some people, maybe like yourselves, myself, who have a responsibility to help it happen. And that means we have to take ourselves in hand and find a way to submit ourselves to discipline, the kind of discipline we've been talking about for a long time, so we can actually bring forward our spiritual possibilities. So this is an age, the beginning of the Aquarian Age, in which many of us will be entering under the planet Saturn. Now, maybe you know about Saturn. Maybe some of you have had your horoscope done. It has that kind of reputation, like it's tough, okay? But it always pays off in the long run. Because when you conform to Saturn, you do everything your higher self wants you to do, and even though your personality feels a little bit restricted, the end result is that your soul shines. So the spiritual people of the world are going into Aquarius under Saturn. And we have to be ready now to submit ourselves to the kind of focused spiritual discipline that we may have only talked about for a long time. I don't know if you're like me, maybe you talk about things you don't do. I mean, you know, that's how I am. Anyway, but I think that the day comes when you have to do it. And this is one of those times. And if humanity can do that, especially among the more spiritual types, it has a chance to go through this perilous transition into the Aquarian Age in a manner that is less destructive than otherwise it might be. We have to be ready to see many old forms swept away. For 2,000 years or so, we've been in this age of Pisces. It's been an age of devotion, an age when the mind was developed. It's been an age of belief and obedience. It has not been an age of direct intuitive knowledge. And that is what we're entering into now with this age of Aquarius. Now, when you study these things, and it's a huge study, it's a wonderful study, you get into the question of the seven rays, all these subtle energies, you get into the esoteric meanings of the sign of the zodiac, signs of the zodiac, you get into the meanings of the planets, you discover that all of us are conditioned by subtle energies, and we have our unique energy pattern, and that the big game in town is to know ourselves, not just in a casual way, but to know precisely what our pattern of energies may be, so that we can participate in the expression of the divine plan, which is what the planetary God has in mind for the elevation of this planet. So my talk tonight, well, it could be on anything, really, you know, once you start talking. but the idea behind it is to discuss some of these subtle energies of a rayological, the seven rays, and of an astrological nature, and help us get a little bit of a handle on what our own energies may be, and knowing what those energies may be, how we can cooperate and find our place in the divine plan, which is conceptualized by the elder brothers and sisters of our planet, the spiritual hierarchy, and which is their response to the great planetary purpose, which always is. Now, the plan is an adaptive mechanism to make sure that that purpose can actually happen. And since we do apparently live in time and space, at least for a while, we have to figure out how we will cooperate with that divine plan. And when we do, which our soul wants us to do, because we really are souls on the higher planes, we find that we have joy come into our life, purpose, power, the feeling of conviction that we are really living as we should live, and we don't have that kind of boredom and drifting and anxiety and all the rest of it. We have a sense of knowing what we're doing in life and of cooperating with the great brotherhood, the great white brotherhood, and it is a very affirming thing. In other words, we all want... I remember what Joseph Campbell said, you know, he said, what people are looking for is not the meaning of life, but the experience of being alive. And I think that's so profound, because we're looking for the life aspect. It's not just a mental thing. We're looking for the thrill that exists when the greater energies actually come into our energy system and animate us in a new way. We're looking to be vibrantly alive in a spiritual sense. And what I'm trying to say is that knowing what our energies are is a great lift in that direction. It helps us live the conscious spiritual life rather than just the life of mystical aspiration where we're hoping that something good happens and we vaguely believe in something. No, we become spiritual occultists, which mean we know and learn scientifically about the subtle energies and apply them to ourselves in as scientific a manner as we possibly can. So that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. First of all, I'm going to talk about the divine plan, what it is, and then I will talk about some of the ray energies and maybe some zodiacal energies. How about, do I have 5 or 6 hours? Don't I have something like that? Something like that, okay? Well, you know, I come here to Copenhagen area 2 times a year, and I've basically been teaching in Humlegården with Dr. Finn Anderson, his clinic, and I'm teaching Cosmic Fire, a treatise on Cosmic Fire, which is really all about everything, you know. And we've taught also esoteric astrology and esoteric psychology and things of that nature out of the Theosophical and Alice Bailey tradition. So I am here, and it takes a long time to get into this deep teaching. You know how it goes. I'm sure, how many have read The Secret Doctrine? Hey, it's Blavatsky's book, come on. This is the TS, right? Come on. The Secret Doctrine is, you know, fantastic book, okay, about planetary history and the coming of the solar angels and all that kind of thing, or Isis unveiled. Theosophy was the great light from the East that Blavatsky brought forward And then Master Jwal Kul, a very brilliant master on the second ray of love and wisdom, he continued that work with Alice Bailey. That was sort of the second installment, a treatise on cosmic fire, which is what I teach here, is said to be the psychological key to the secret doctrine. So they're like continuing books. And in the year 2025 and beyond, Master DK will again give forth a teaching. It'll be the third installment, and we're really looking forward to that. We just have to last 15 years. Now, lasting 15 years is very important because in the year 2025, we are told that the first specific plans will be laid for the coming out of the Masters of the Wisdom, which we call the externalization of the hierarchy. And that will lead to the most important event on our planet, which is called the reappearance of the Christ or the reappearance of the Lord Maitreya. And how many of you know the Great Invocation? Have you ever used the Great Invocation? Good, so that's great. And when the Great Invocation was given out after World War II was over in 1945, it was given by Sanat Kumara, the projection of the planetary god. He gave that to humanity because the Christ, the Lord Maitreya, the head of the hierarchy, many names, he agreed to appear physically with his Maya Varupa, which is his will-created body. Now, I know a lot of people disagree about this kind of thing, and they say, well, the Christ will only reappear in the etheric, like, you know, Rudolf Steiner said, but that was back in 1925, and many things happened, including the World War and so forth. So the Christ made a decision to emerge on the world stage using his physical form at great cost and sacrifice to himself, and because he made that decision, so the story goes, Sanat Kumara gave this ancient world prayer, the Great Invocation to humanity. And the strongest instrument that we have at this time to bring about the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy is the use of that invocation. It is a word of power. It is a mantra of light and power. So the daily and frequent use of that mantra of power, translated in so many different languages, with Great Invocation Day coming, right? World Invocation Day is coming. That is a tremendous tool to bring about what we all want, which is the reemergence of the great hierarchy of light and love to guide human affairs aright. Of course, you know, we can't be lazy about it, because as Master Maurya said, the first ray master, in his Agni Yoga books, he said, when reporting what the Lord Maitreya said to him, the new age will come through by human hands and human feet. In other words, we're not going to be just waiting for them to do something for us. We are the ones who have to pitch in and really recreate our world under their guidance. So you know about the concept of the spiritual hierarchy, I trust. The elder brothers and sisters of the race who have gone into the fifth initiation and beyond, and they are now liberated human beings. We want to become like that so we can serve better. All right, that's kind of an introduction. And, you know, I have notes here, but I'm just liable to leave things on one page and keep talking. But we'll see how it goes. This talk is all about your place in the divine plan. So we have to understand the divine plan. The divine plan is, you know, there are seven dimensions in our cosmic physical world. And on the third dimension, this divine plan is formulated. This is the third dimension. It's called the atmic plane or the plane of spiritual will. I know you can't really read this. It's too, you know, close or far or whatever. But here is, it's called the spiritual plane, the nirvanic plane, the atmic plane, and the plane of spiritual will. And that's where the divine plan is formulated by the elder brothers and sisters. And here, because the divine purpose comes from these two levels, and the plan is formulated here. Now, what the divine plan is specifically, it's difficult to say, but we can speak of certain generalities. And here is the divine plan in a nutshell. And you will recognize it as an expression of the three aspects of divinity. There's a trinity everywhere you go. It's not just Christian, as you know. It's in the Hindu and it's in the Buddhist, it's all these different traditions have the Trinity. The plan for man has three great goals: the revelation of love, the illumination of the mind, and the evocation of the will. Now that's easy enough to understand and to remember. And of course what it means is every one of us has to become a loving being, an illumined being, and a being who understands how to be willing to respond to the spiritual will, which is the intention of God the Planetary Logos for this planet. We got to do our part. And when we respond to the spiritual will, we do it eventually, no matter what. No matter what happens to us in our personal form, we somehow manage to fulfill the inner directive. The revelation of love through the soul, the illumination of the mind governing the personality, and the evocation of the will, which comes from our spirit aspect. And when you look at what we are spirit, we are soul, we are personality. This is our Trinity. And the first ray of power is related to the spirit we are. The second ray of love and wisdom is related to our consciousness or our soul, because those words mean the same thing. Soul and consciousness are equivalent terms. And then our spiritual illumination is related to our personality, the third aspect of divinity. So we have to understand not only the divine plan, but what it means now. Because the divine plan keeps changing according to what aspect of the purpose has to be worked out. So it changes in time and space according to the energies available. So what does it mean right now, the divine plan? Because the goal here is that each one of us should know something about this and make it a priority in our lives to fit into this and express our thoughts, actions, and feelings so that it actually conforms to this great thought form called the divine plan. It sounds like discipline, isn't it? Well, it is ruled by Saturn, the planet of discipline that rules the atmic spiritual will plane. So, you know, we can study spirituality a little bit. We can like it. We can be attracted by it. We can have what's called a little bit of discipleship as convenient, you know, if it doesn't mess with our life too much, we can have that. Or we can focus our spiritual will and make as much progress in 10 lives as in 100 ordinary drifting lives. So Master Moria says, why 100 lives when 10 will do? So, I mean, that's up to every one of us, see? So, we're living in such critical times on our planet that that kind of decision is up to every one of us. It will mean some tough going, but it's worth it in the long run. Okay. So, what about right now and the divine plan? Well, the first thing the hierarchy is trying to do is to clarify what divides humanity. Because sometimes we just don't see what it is that really keeps us distinct from each other and in conflict with each other. We have to divide what is old and what is new. Well, there's an old age and a new age, and there are things that want to take us backwards and things forward. We have to discriminate between what is individualistic and selfish from that which is in the best interests of humanity. Brazil is calling. You know, it's quite a world. You just, all kinds of people. I'll turn off my internet. Okay, so we have to discriminate between what is for the isolated individual and what is for the welfare of the group, including that group we call humanity. We have to discriminate what is fundamentalistic and reactionary from what is progressive and illuminating. Now, we have a huge religious problem in the world right now, tied in with politics and economics. And if there is another war, it will be a religious war. And we are told that the great struggle at the moment, the great crisis, is in the Department of Religion, of which the Christ, Lord Maitreya, the head of the hierarchy, is the head. That's his department. We've got to get it straightened out there. So the problem of fundamentalism, which is a narrow, fearful attitude based on concrete mind formulations which you either believe or reject, is severe. And we see it all around us, and we've got to deal with it. And there are people, of course, who are progressive and illuminated, and they're much wider, and they realize what is the human soul and the human spirit. It's a battle line. We've got to make these lines clear. The fourth thing, of course, is what is Piscean and what is Aquarian? Pisces is a great sign, but we're moving out of it now. We're moving out of a 25,000-year age of Pisces, out of a 2,500-year age of Pisces, and into Aquarius. So the first thing the hierarchy wants to do with respect to the divine plan is to clarify the cleavages, clarify the lines of demarcation so everybody knows what's good and what's bad. And that's not clear yet. It will be clear. The next thing after clarifying the cleavages is it wants to heal and bridge the cleavages. So whatever we can do, not only to reveal the distinctions, but to make bridges between these groups so that they can harmonize under the fourth ray of harmony, that we have to do too. Now, the next thing they want to do is part of the plan. They want to approach on the inside, the subjective approach to humanity, to get closer and closer. How does the hierarchy get closer to humanity? Well, it's not through channeling. It's not through thinking you're talking to some master who has a lot of time to talk to you because you're so interesting. It's not about that. It's getting closer to your own soul, getting closer to your own higher self. And the first master you meet is your own soul, the solar angel. That solar angel is so powerful that it already was a human being in the last solar system and is now considered an initiate of all degrees. So in our meditation, when we get closer and closer to our own soul, we are approaching as well the master of wisdom who will one day bring us into his spiritual vibratory family called an ashram. An ashram is the state of mind of a spiritual group. An ashram is a point of focus at a certain frequency. We all belong to one. Eventually, we've got to find out what it is. So they're coming closer. And then the next thing they want to do is to create a day of crisis. Now, the Master DK is very interesting. He says, if you're not having a crisis, why aren't you having one? He seems to think it's very important that we have a crisis. I'm thinking, there was a great war in Atlantis 4 million years ago. Blavatsky talks about this, one of the great battles that took place in India. And we are told a fascinating thing, that many people stepped on the path of initiation at that time who would not be even treading it today because the crisis was so severe and the pressure was so great. Now, that's an amazing thought to me. In other words, Master Maurya has a little mantra with which I think you're going to disagree, okay? But he says, the worse, the better. Do you like that? So those of you who are astrologers, anybody, the old saying is that the personality loves trines and the soul loves squares. Squares are the difficult aspects in your chart, and the trines are what goes easy. So sometimes when it's tough on the outer level, the spirit, the soul, really makes progress. That's where we are now. And Master DK wants to bring about a day of crisis, so let's read what it is. Through this crisis in which the aspiration of humanity for peace, understanding, goodwill, and truth can be raised to its highest possible expression, right now it's a little bit vague, but just imagine the majority of humanity invoking these things. There will be brought about at a given moment of fusion the downpouring desire of the spiritual forces of the hierarchy of the Christ and of all associated with him, call them by whatever name you want, and thus there will be precipitated upon earth that spiritual stimulation and that healing force which will end the present period of strife and misery. This is from the book Esoteric Psychology. That means if we can get ourselves into a state of intense, united invocation, there will be a response. But usually there has to be so much crisis before you're willing to do that. Mm. Maybe, you know, yeah, almost the personality almost has to get down on its knees in order to invoke these higher energies, say, look, I can't do this alone. I need some help here. Master DK said that humanity will understand soon that while it is responsible, it cannot solve all of its problems by itself. In that case, the solar angel will be invoked, the soul will be invoked, and the spiritual hierarchy is the soul of humanity. Now, have you ever had a crisis? Maybe. You know? Ever had a tough time? Have you ever looked within? Have you ever looked within for help from a higher power, some inner sustainment, some higher wisdom? You've done it too, right? We've all done it. We've been in trouble with the personality, and the wisdom has not been sufficient for us to solve it on our own. And humanity is coming to the same position. So that's what the hierarchy is attempting to bring about. That's the divine plan shortly. Just to review, it wants to clarify the cleavages that separate us, then it wants to bridge the cleavages, then it wants to approach inwardly, then it wants to bring about a day of crisis which will involve an invocation of great energies which will bring healing and peace and the things we need. This involves, by the way, group consciousness. Now, you know, this is the theme of the Aquarian Age, group consciousness. So, if we can overcome our selfish individualism and our sense that we are always right and the other guy's always wrong, then we will be able to work together in a much more powerful, invocative method than we can just praying or meditating by ourselves. So I trust that many of you are working in groups, is it so? Okay, and that you try to get along as souls with your fellow human beings in those groups, right? And that when you have trouble in your groups, you actually seek soul solutions to those troubles. See, we're learning. We're learning how to do this. And the day will come when humanity itself will say, enough of this, we need to invoke the higher powers. So let's take a look at what this can mean. There will come now the fifth phase, the gradual physical externalization of the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. Have you heard of this theme, the externalization of the hierarchy? Have you heard of this? The whole idea is, back in Atlantis, the hierarchy of adepts or masters was quite close to humanity, teaching, guiding, etc. Then came the great battle between the Black Lodge and the forces of light, and the Black Lodge prevailed in some ways, and the consciousness of humanity became materialistic for 4 million years already, and the hierarchy had to withdraw behind the veil, always able to keep contact with those who were spiritually aspiring, but could not have the same direct influence on humanity. Now comes a point when the soul of our planet is ready to emerge into power, when the Christ is preparing to reappear, that the hierarchy can again emerge publicly and work with humanity. And we have a tremendous amount of anticipation about that, and a lot of glamour, because the masters are not what we think they are. We have all kinds of ideas about what they are, but they are sane, after all, and they are not the ill-bred folk that many people think they are. They are not approached through fanaticism. They are approached through love, an approach through intelligence, an approach through sacrifice. That's how the hierarchy is approached. So we need to clarify our idea about the masters of the wisdom that are coming forth on our planet to direct and help to guide humanity, which will take its own fate in hand and produce a better world under their inspiration. That's called the externalization of the hierarchy. When do we expect it? We expect it following 2025, slowly, here and there. Let me read a little section about this. Because many people say, well, they're already here, they're already with us and all the rest, but, you know, it's not really true. They are here, yes, they've never been away, Some who are very close to them can contact them, but they are not publicly recognized. We have such terrible distorted ideas about what they are. So we need to clarify our minds about what is the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. Okay. And they are human beings who have been through everything we've been through, and they have triumphed where we have not yet triumphed. Okay, what does it say? When the task of the preparation of men's minds is further advanced, when the knowledge of the existence of the masters and their hierarchical endeavor and of the united hierarchy of our planet are a commonly recognized truth, we're not there yet, are we? When that's a commonly recognized truth, and when active goodwill is recognized as a real national asset in all lands, all countries recognize the value of goodwill in dealing with each other, we're not there yet, then the speed of the externalization of the hierarchy will be greatly increased, and we're talking now after 2025, what will we go through to prepare this, we'll just have to see, the speed will be greatly increased, then the five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form. London, Geneva, Darjeeling, Tokyo, New York. Five spiritual centers, each with their own ray energies and astrological signs, just like chakras on the face of our globe. That's where these masters will focus their attention. The five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form and will call also for recognition. The groups they're working will be known. What I'm talking about here is the externalization of the hierarchy. The groups they're working will be known, and they will also be in close touch with each other. From that time on, the network of initiates and disciples under the direction of the masters will be worldwide. A worldwide spiritual network of spiritual people who are disciplining themselves as disciples and initiates, and they will know each other, work together in global unity. The network of initiates and disciples under the direction of the masters will be worldwide, and in every field of human expression, this is what's different from today, the opinion of these men and women and of the masters presiding at the five centers and in their affiliated groups will be regarded as of immense value by all governmental, economic, and social organizations. That is a tremendous statement of what must happen before we can even talk about the reappearance of the Christ. So where are we? The five centers aren't recognized. The hierarchy isn't understood except by a few people who then often distort their understanding of what it is. Governments have no idea of what that's all about whatsoever. Nobody is consulted for their wisdom and knowledge, no. So you can see what a lot of work has to be done in these five centers. And, you know, for instance, Denmark and the Scandinavian countries, they're within the range of the center London and also Geneva. See, we are all affected by different centers, and we will be powerfully so. And then good advice will be sought by the members of the hierarchy and the governments, the economies, and the social systems will value what they have to say. That's just preparation. That's preparation for the emergence of the world teacher. So there's a lot of people who say, hey, look in London, he's driving this car. Okay, find him. Has this been fulfilled? We know the answer. So until these things are fulfilled, until we are told there is a measure of peace in the world, sufficient, until there is economic sharing, reasonably so, is there? Until the church begins to clean house, well, okay, we got one out of three. The church is beginning to clean house. The reappearance of the Christ will not be a possibility. A measure of peace, economic sharing, and the cleaning out of our religious organizations. The church means not just the Christian church, all the churches. Okay, that's a must. Then comes, when this is all set up, then comes the actual reappearance of the Christ. You know, by whatever name we want to call him, whether it's the Lord Maitreya or the Messiah or the last of the Mahdi's or the Kalki Avatar or you name it, all the traditions have the idea of the reappearance of the world teacher. He will come and he will be with us for approximately 2,200, 2,300 years, 2,400 years, something like that. His span of time is 5,000 years as the world teacher. When the Buddha, who was the head of the spiritual hierarchy, entered Nirvana, but he's not gone, you know, he's in Shambhala now, but, and he comes every, you know, how many of you go to the Waisak Festival meditations, right? You know what that's all about? Waisak Festival, right? Okay. So, Buddha's with us, but when the Buddha achieved his enlightenment, which was a huge planetary event, then the one we call the Christ took over the head of the spiritual hierarchy, and that was 2,500 years ago. And from this time, he will still work for 2,500 years. Normally, a world savior or world teacher gets a 2,500-year span, and that's it. That's his term of office. But just the way the constellations in the sky, Aquarius and Pisces, overlap, so this particular world savior or teacher, Lord Maitreya, is overlapping his span of office for 5,000 years. And we really need it because, you know, we have a very serious planetary situation. So then we talk about the reappearance of the Christ. It is coming. What would it mean? And I love this passage because it brings a degree of sanity to the whole situation. It's not like the Christian church anticipates it. That is a limited distortion of a truth. It's not the way the Muslim group anticipates the coming of the Imam Mahdi, who will come in fire and flame and save all the Muslims. No, it's for all of humanity. The Christ is not Christian, nor any other religion. He is the great world teacher, and his appearance here among us is the most important planetary event of this time. Now, many of us use this mantra, forgetting the things which lie behind, I will strive towards my higher spiritual possibilities. I dedicate myself anew to the service of the coming one, and will do all I can to prepare men's minds and hearts for that event. I have no other life intention. Say, well, you know, he can appear without our help, right? No. The minds and the hearts of human beings have to be prepared for this, so they can understand more clearly and without so much glamour and illusion what's going on. We live in a very beglamoured world. People have false emotions, false values, distorted, myopic views of reality. They're running around. Have you ever heard of the term Maya? I suppose. Maya, glamour, and illusion. The world Maya. Master DK calls Maya that unthinking emotional mess in which most people live. That's Maya. So we have huge clarifications to deliver by the correcting of Maya, glamour, and illusion right in me, right in you. We got to do that first. Okay, now the reappearance of the Christ. What's it all about? Now the masters are established in these centers, each with their own rays, each with their own astrology, doing what they have to do. In a minute, I'll tell you about who they are. Then, under a great wave of spiritual inspiration, the divine spirit of expectancy for the reappearance of the Christ will sweep through the world. It will then be regarded as credible and creditable, whereas many thinking people today think it's nonsense. Maybe here. Maybe you think it's nonsense too. I don't know. But, you know, it's not accepted as reasonable. It's just some fanciful religious opiate or hope because we can't handle our world. It will then be regarded as credible and creditable, and his coming will provide the germ for all world hope. The reason for this will be that the most respected, enlightened, and cultured people on the planet will be looking for him. And we know we look up to certain people and we value their opinion. And then, my brothers, he will come, bringing new energies of love and compassion, and implementing the spirit of fresh enlightenment. To these important events must also be added the new revelation for which all men wait, and to which they will be able to respond, owing to the needed and new stimulation. That's the way the Tibetan Master sees the actual reappearance of the world teacher. And what I'm trying to say here is that if we really care about our planet, care about humanity, care about our children and our grandchildren and all the children of all the species of every group, the hierarchy and its presence among us, carrying the ageless wisdom into the benighted minds of humanity, is an absolute necessity if we're going to avoid planetary destruction. Because it's happened before. And Master DK said, look, it is a possibility that can be visioned, he said. If the next war comes, there will occur an explosion, he says, and this was written after atomic energy had been found, that will destroy all of humanity, except a very few perhaps, and the whole experiment will have to be started again to produce a true humanity which will live according to the spiritual principles and divine plan. He said, look, if humanity doesn't straighten up quick, it will not survive, nor should it. See, we're out of line. I mean, you know, people like ourselves, we're good people, we love each other, we know what love is. But the world isn't necessarily like that. The love energy has to be evoked from so many people who hate and don't trust and all the rest of it. And if we don't do this, and if the hierarchy does not return, then we could face the destruction of our species and the need to begin the 25 million year experiment all over again. Because that's how long we've been on this planet. 21 million and something years. And some of us even started on the moon. That's what occultism tells us, the so-called moon chain. And some of us even started in what's called a previous solar system, where the material aspect was strongly accented. Some of us have been around a long time, mm-hmm. not necessarily making the progress we should, because we're so stubborn and we don't love enough. So this need for love, true principle of love, true heartfelt love, of soul to soul, not just desire, but real love, this is an absolute requirement in our world, and the reappearance of the Christ signals the arrival of that kind of love, because when he appears, it will be the signal that humanity has taken the first initiation, which is called the birth of the Christ in the heart. Now, you know, many of us have passed through that. We love, we aspire spiritually, we struggle, we want to improve. Those are the signs of the first initiation. Many of us have met the Christ face to face in the chamber of initiation on the higher mental plane. We have met the great Lord. Many, maybe most, in the spiritual community have at least met him once. Forgotten everything, of course, that's how it goes, but we have met him, and it makes such an indelible impression on our consciousness that you become re-motivated for the rest of your incarnations and can no longer drift back into the dreary realm of elemental lunar living, which is just, you know, I am my body. I am my feelings. I'm even my mind, and I'm proud of it. I love it. No, yeah, that's not what we want. We want something better. I am the soul. I am you. I am the one. Now, the full moon in Gemini is coming up. What is it? Early morning? Maybe 1 o'clock in the morning or something on May 28th?
Yeah,
1 something? Do you, exactly?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, and a little later.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the high point of love for the entire year. It's Christ's unique festival. As a matter of fact, it's said that he preaches the last sermon of the Buddha before the assembled hierarchy on this festival. So they work together very strongly. The Buddha in the East, the Christ in the West. And at this time, there is the opportunity for everyone to experience this Christ love and the union of East and West, the union of soul and personality. It's also the day surrounding the full moon. I'm not sure exactly what day it is. World Invocation Day. Does anybody know exactly?
Yeah, you're celebrating it on the same day.
At the same day this time.
Yeah.
Okay. World Invocation Day. And the Great Invocation then is repeated every 15 minutes all over the world and all the different languages to try to bring about this invocation of the great spiritual energy. So if you can participate during that day in the huge demand for the downflow of the great energies, it's a high spiritual experience, and I would recommend honoring the full moons if you possibly can. Because the full moons are not about full moons, they're about full suns. In other words, the solar energy is so strong at the time of the full moon that the door opens and we can get the zodiacal energy in a unique way that we cannot do at any other time of the month. So if you have, do you have full moon groups here? Do you have any?
Yeah.
Yes, you do?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Really take advantage of those and really use this great invocation day, World Invocation Day, and get together with a few people who are willing to rotate in the sounding of the invocation in your own language. Keep it going all through the day and contribute to the world invocation of the great powers. These are spiritual opportunities, and we want to show up for them, don't we? I guess I have a little sixth ray. Okay. You know what the sixth ray is? I'll show you a picture of Billy Graham. You'll see what the sixth ray is. Okay. I'm keeping my eye on the clock because I know it's hot here. And you're going to need refreshment. I'll count the number of chairs after you come back. All right. So now what? We understand what the plan is, what the immediate plan is, what the hierarchy intends, that the Christ intends to reemerge among us. And the spirit of peace, oh, you know what's really interesting? The Christ isn't coming alone. I love this. That he's the center of a triangle. And around him are three great beings. The Buddha is one, representing the third ray of active intelligence. Then another point in the triangle is represented by a great being who is called the spirit of peace, or the spirit of equilibrium. We hear even in the Christian Bible that there will result 1,000 years of peace, it's symbolic, when so-called Satan will be bound. What that really means is that the 666 of our form nature, our mind is a six, our emotions are six, our body is a six, will be restrained and subject to the powers of the soul, the powers of the Christ force. That's what it means for Satan to be bound, in the spirit of peace. And then, at the high point of this triangle, there is a being called the Avatar of Synthesis, a great first-ray being who is pulling all efforts together on our planet in the spirit of synthesis. So the Christ is surrounded by ray 1, ray 2, and ray 3, and they reinforce his power because there's the tremendous task to be accomplished. Okay. Now, once we understand this plan, each of us must take the next practical step, assessing our ability to play our small part in meeting the need. So we have to take stock. We have to look at ourselves realistically. Who are we really? How have we succeeded? How have we failed? What are our virtues? What are our liabilities? A realistic look at what we are. Because, you know, it's no use running around with wishful thinking. You have certain abilities. So do I. If I use those abilities, I'll be a help. And if I think I'm more than I am or less than I am, I won't be a help. And we all want to help. Okay. So then after that, we must act. Once we know our stuff, what we have that's good, we must act. Now, I might almost get to my subject tonight. Well, you know, the subject is the ageless wisdom, right? This is the subject. The great wisdom of the ages, and it, you know, it takes more than one life to learn the ageless wisdom. It's forever, forever, forever. So I just want to hit the high points. And what I want to emphasize most of all, which I didn't know that I would be emphasizing, you never know, right? Is the sense of responsibility that falls upon every one of us. You know, it's not, the soul is not a feel-good center. Of course, it feels good when you respond to the soul, it does, but how do you know when you're responding to the soul? It's not necessarily because it feels good. It's because you are carrying out your responsibility. The first sign of real soul expression in the life is the willingness, the eagerness to carry forth your responsibilities. It's discipline. So when we actually act in a responsible manner, we are fulfilling the soul. Now that's not New Age lingo. The New Age wants everything very pleasant, because it's just wonderful to be in the New Age and all wonderful things are going to happen, but not without our very focused, responsible attention. Okay. So what does it take to understand our ability to meet the present need as understood in the context of the divine plan? What about our abilities? What do we need? Okay, the very first thing the Delphic Oracle says, know thyself. Socrates said it too. He had Leo on his ascendant. Leo is the self-knowledge sign. How many have Leo here? You know? Or wish you did. Okay. Okay. Anyway, know thyself is the very first thing. That involves understanding one's equipment and capacities in a detailed manner, not vaguely, really taking stock. And then understanding the context in which one is placed and how one can best utilize one's ability within that context. Okay, you're here in Denmark. This is your context. I know the internet makes the world your context, but right here in Denmark, I'm sure there are some things that could be improved, just like in any other nation. This is your context. How can I serve my divinely inspired nation, because they are, with my abilities, such as they are, so that it can become a sacred country? What is a sacred country? A country in which the soul nature is expressing. That is a sacred country. So our first duty is to, we serve humanity by serving our country, making it a better place, working with our particular problems in the context in which we find ourselves. Okay. Now, upon what is self-knowledge based? First of all, discovering yourself as a soul. What is a soul? A spiritual being whose true focus is not in the body, not in the emotions, not in the lower mind, but whose true focus is here, on the higher mental plane. Now, we can talk soul, soul, soul. I'm soul, you're soul, blah, blah, blah. It's just a bunch of words. Unless we discover ourselves as beings in this dimension of consciousness and know it for a fact. We've got to know. We've got to become knowers of God, knowers of the soul, and not just talkers. I think that's all I have to say. Actually, having the experience of being a soul, working through the personality vehicles. I'm not a personality that has a soul. I'm a soul who's working through a personality. I'm having this experience in the lower planes. And this is accomplished over long ages of difficult evolution and many joys and sorrows on this planet of suffering. I'm afraid it is. You know, there's a lot more suffering on Earth than any other planet, that's what we're told. But it also is accomplished through what we call spiritual approach. So we have to learn the sanctioned methods of approaching the soul through meditation, through study, and service. Meditation, study, and service. That's the trinity we approach. Okay, first, what self-knowledge is based on, first, finding that I am a soul. How many of us know that we are souls? We know it, we know it. Do we know it? No. Okay. Let me hear you. And, you know, after a while, you know, at first we learn about it, but then we say, hey, there's someone else in there. That someone is immortal. That someone is the observer of all of these experiences. That someone does not die. That someone is not a limited earthly being. That someone is a spiritual being. That's me. That's I. It becomes real. Okay. Now, the next thing, we have to understand the degree of our soul unfoldment. This is, in other words, how far along on our evolutionary journey are we? We all have the idea that thousands of lives are required to make a human being. I would say the average is 25 million years to make a master of the wisdom. Now, some are faster, some are slower, and so forth. But I would say that's a good ballpark figure, and we've been at it on this planet for 21 million and a half years. Progress has been slow. Okay, so if we can understand the constitution of the human being, and especially the egoic lotus, and the personality vehicles, the mind, emotions, and etheric body, that will help us understand our soul unfoldment. Now, let me pretend I know where I am. And this is just what you're not supposed to do. Did you get that? Okay. This is called you. This is a picture, an artist's conception, of what you look like on the higher mental plane. You really look a lot better than this. Well, when you take the fourth initiation, this is what you look like. Okay? This is a fully unfolded human being, having complete knowledge, complete soul love, and complete sacrificial will, and the central jewel at the heart of the flower is open, radiating the quality of spiritual will, coming from your spirit on still higher plane. This is what we have to learn about. Now, in truth, most of us, none of us, has all three of these sacrifice petals fully unfolded. We all have this unfolded. Mostly our love petals are unfolded. But in terms of really selfless sacrifice, this unfolds through the process of initiation. And we have to know about this. We have to know what our next step is and what we have yet to unfold to become a fully realized human being. Because once this temple of Solomon, as they call it, is completely unfolded, then we will not have to incarnate as a human being anymore unless for the choice of service. So the complete unfoldment of this flower signifies the taking of the so-called crucifixion initiation, whereby you repay to humanity in acts of great service, even the giving of your life and all things. You empty the bowl, you drink the karma, and you are completed with human evolution. And we're not there yet. We have a lot of work to do yet before we look like this on the higher mental plane. Now, you know, maybe the new computer graphics will be able to describe what this really looks like, because it's supposed to be a beautiful, scintillating, vibrant, vortextual kind of experience. This is just flat, but you get the idea. And every one of these sections and every one of these colors, they all mean something. They're all connected with rays. They're all connected with planets. Life after life, you are unfolding this. This is what you look like. How unfolded are we? What is our next step? Can we clearly assess what we have to do next? Because the Tibetan teacher said, people need to know only two things. What is the constitution of the human being, and what is their next step ahead? Mm-hmm. So maybe a lot of us say we know the constitution of the human being. Maybe we do. There's a lot to it. Do we specifically know our next step ahead, and are we willing to take it? Now that's a question that only you can answer, and only I can answer. But we need to know that. Okay. Now, I'm almost giving you a break now. Okay, it's coming, it's coming. What is the degree of soul unfoldment? And then, feeling like a soul, knowing your soul, what is my degree of unfoldment? Because according to my degree of unfoldment, so will be my contribution. If I want to walk in there and pretend I can do what a master can do or a high initiate, I can't do it. I say I want to do it, but I can't do it. So we have to know what's right for us to do. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the Hindu tradition, better a man's own dharma than the dharma of another. You've heard of this. So the idea is, even if I can do something better than someone else, if it's not my dharma, I just leave it to that person, even if I fail trying to do my own. Mm-hmm. So better our own dharma, what is it? Okay. So to understand, next comes in this question of knowing thyself, understand your subtle energy system. This can be years, okay? But by the time you leave tonight, at least you'll have some of it. Okay. Understanding the seven rays and how they express in your energy system. This means understanding your formula, your fivefold and eventually sixfold ray chart or formula, consisting of your soul ray, your personality ray, the ray of your mental body, the ray of your emotional body, the ray of your etheric physical body. Each one of us has a fivefold formula that determines how we should grow and how we should serve the plan. How many here feel you know your ray chart? Okay, well that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Maybe a third. That's good. Now we want more. Okay. Take a little study, you know? How many are absolutely convinced beyond any shadow of a doubt that you absolutely know your ray formula? I can't even raise my own hand. I've been studying for 40 years, you know, but I change my mind every once in a while. I know my astrological chart, that's for sure. Then you have to understand the nature of the astrological energies, especially of your rising sign, your sun sign and your moon sign, and your ruling planets. Does everybody here know your rising sign? Yes? So, okay, if you don't know your rising sign, find out when you're born, or get with a good astrologer and give them the story of your life, have them look at you, and try to size you up so we can see what time of day you may have been born on the day that you were born. That will give you your rising sign. Why is it important? Because it tells you what your soul expects of you in this incarnation. So you got to know your five rays, even six, because the spirit has a ray, and your three major points of your astrological chart. This is your formula for progress. This is a technical matter, but it's not so tough. And if we know these things, we will have a pattern as to how we can evolve. And everybody's different. You are unique. And you have a unique path. And we call that path by the name Antarkarana. Have you heard this term? The Rainbow Bridge, you've heard that term. Antikorana. Okay. Uniquely, you must tread your path. But at least let's get to know ourselves. That's the very first step. There's not a thing we do, say, no behavior, which is not fair game for study. Every gesture, every expression, every look in the eye, every smile or frown, it all reveals your inner energy pattern. So now we have to start studying each other. You know, what are you looking at? You? Okay, and we will discover through spiritual discernment the subtle energy that lies behind the obvious individual. And that's very interesting. Because we are all like a book of thousands of pages unread. We've forgotten all those pages. And we have to re-expose ourselves to them. We start by understanding our ray formulas and our astrology. Okay. The last thing, or almost the last thing, understand how the rays and astrology work together, because they do. Every ray has its signs and planets, and every sign and planet has its rays, and integrate them all and make them effective. Now you know the whole story. That's what we have to do. So what I've said so far in part one, there is a divine plan. It involves knowing how to love, having an illumined mind, and obeying your spiritual will. There is an immediate task before humanity, seeing the cleavages, bridging the cleavages, bringing the hierarchy closer, bringing the hierarchy forth, bringing the Christ forth. If we want to help with the job, we have to know what we can do well. And we won't know what we can do well unless we know ourselves more deeply than most of us know ourselves. So we've got to get busy on the task of knowing who we are so we can serve this great planetary project without which our human race will go down to destruction and have to start all over again. And that's not my idea. That is given by one of the masters of the wisdom who says, unfortunately, is a possibility that can be visioned. So obviously the responsibility upon us is very great. Okay, have a break.